Are you actually afraid that one day in our future, and I don't know how far it is, maybe not as far as I might imagine, robots will rise up and make some sort of decision to kill those that made them?
You know, no.
You don't believe that?
No, I don't. The book is in the humor section. And, you know, how to survive a robot uprising. The thing is, I'm not personally afraid that a robot uprising is going to happen, but, you know, you can't be too safe, you know. So all the information that's in the, you know, it's all real. I mean, I didn't, I literally asked people, you know, can a humanoid robot be this, how tall, how big could it be? Could it be the size of, you know, like what you see in Star Wars? And it's really interesting to ask roboticists this kind of questions because they'll come back with real answers, you know. they'll work it out on a napkin and say.
Well, look, if we can imagine a situation where robots do rise up or do make a decision that is not in our best interest, then probably it can happen. Most of what we have imagined in the past seems as though it's happened.
Well, I think we tend to focus on the stuff that happens. You know, there's a lot of patting yourself on the back whenever another thing from Star Trek comes true.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say that just because we can imagine it, it's possible, although normally that's an optimistic thought.
and then there's a follow-up question here. I mean, all this indicates that you sort of did believe that, but apparently not. The single best tip to keep in mind when fighting a robot would be...
So if you're fighting a robot, the best tip is to go for the sensors, because when you're designing a robot, the sensors are always the most sensitive areas of the robot that are prone to error. So the things like cameras, you know, cameras are just relative to the rest of a robot, they're just so delicate, you know.
So they're also going to be the best protected, though, aren't they? In other words, if you're building a robot and you know it's going to go into combat, then you're going to protect the most sensitive parts, camera,
you know,
whatever.
That's true. In a robot uprising, which is what I consider, that you're not necessarily fighting military robots. If it's a robot uprising, that means all the servant robots decide to come at you. You know, mm-hmm. So now you're fighting your Roomba, right? But as it turns out, the sensors are the most delicate, and they also have the most constraints, because a lot of times they'll have to be, for instance, a camera has to be line of sight. It has to have, you can't put it behind a thick piece of steel. For instance, I actually worked for Northrop Grumman for a little while, which is a big military defense contractor, and we were working on an autonomous boat. So it's just an unmanned surface vehicle, a boat that drives itself. Mm-hmm. And we were not allowed to use any active sensors, so sensors that bounce signals off of other things, like a laser rangefinder or ultrasonic sensors, you know, operate the way bats echolocate, because that gives away your location immediately. And so it was much harder to design this thing without
any... Then what do you use for sensors, then, if you can't do that?
Well, you use passive sensors like cameras and microphones, but you can't use any active illumination with your cameras. So, you know, you might actually just have a spotlight next to a camera normally, for visible light, or you might have an IR... light source, you know, with an IR camera.
Sure.
So yeah, just cameras and microphones. It's pretty much what we had to deal with, which makes it pretty tough at night.
And you did it?
Well, yeah, we got it out there. It was very docile for a military robot. It was called the Rowboat. It got out there and it tootled around and it had GPS as well. Yeah, it had some of course an IMU and some things like that, just so it could figure out what its orientation was. And yeah, there were a lot of really confused people on the river out there. It was in Pittsburgh, the Three Rivers area. You dump them out there, and it was really clear that there was no one driving that boat.
Wow, how long might it be, Doctor, before we actually do have servant level robots?
You know, the question is whether we want them. You know, it doesn't really seem like Americans want it as bad as the Japanese and the Koreans. So if you look at the pace of humanoid robotics research in Japan, they're really focusing on humanoid robots that are going to be servants. They are definitely going to go into your home. They're going to pick up all your tools. They're going to use your broom. They're going to wash your dishes. Just a total general purpose servant. And that's that's a long ways off. It's a really optimistic goal to reach.
Well, why do you think Americans, as opposed to the Japanese, are not as interested?
You know, I'm not sure. I think instead of looking at why Americans are not interested, I think first it pays to look at why the Japanese are so interested. And I think part of that is their culture, obviously, and some religion. There's a really good book on this called Loving the Machine, which is all about why the Japanese love robots. Part of it has to do with Shintoism, which is a religion that associates a sort of a life force with every inanimate object, including robots. And so they think of them naturally as something that's alive, and so they forgive them for not maybe performing up to a standard that makes it worth the money to buy them.
I'll be darned.
You know, and I found that the United States, we're doing a lot of work on humanoid robotics, don't get me wrong. Part of the reason why the United States, Western Europe, and Japan are really interested in humanoid robots that are going to be in our houses helping us out is because in the States, all the baby boomers are going to retire or starting to. And in Japan and Western Europe, they're also noticing that their population, the demographic, is skewing so that there are a lot more retired people than there are workers. There's nobody to take care of everybody that's retiring. And the robots are literally the only caretakers that a lot of people are going to be able to have.
Are they going to be that good that soon? Are the Japanese going to be able to come up with a robot that is going to be sufficient for those needs?
Well, see, the Japanese are going for the whole thing all at once. And in the States, we tend to compartmentalize all the problems and try to solve them separately. Now, here's a thought-provoking idea that I just heard. I just interviewed this guy a week ago for a Popular Mechanics article, and he's a humanoid robotics guy, and his name's Trevor Blackwell, and he's running a place called Anybots, Inc., and he's got a really impressive pneumatically-powered humanoid, but it's got no brains. You know, it's got no intelligence, and I was asking him, what's his vision? You know, he says he wants to build a humanoid robot servants that are going to go into the homes. His vision, outsource the intelligence to a human being in another country. So you've got a robot. Now, this is thought-provoking. This honestly scares the bejesus out of me.